This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, sitting in for Terry Gross. Cartoonist Gary Larson has devoted fans all over the world. His weird and surreal comic, The Far Side, was syndicated in more than 1,900 newspapers around the world and translated into 17 languages. Larson retired from drawing The Far Side nearly a decade ago. Now his complete output of cartoons, 4,337 in all, has been collected in a giant, expensive, handsome, two-volume collection called The Complete Far Side, 1980 to 1994. In his introduction to the book, Larson writes, "I'm actually proud of this body of work. And if nothing else, the other cartoonists will never call me skinny books again." No kidding. The Complete Far Side weighs so much, it ought to come with its own Sherpa. But even though the book is heavy, the tone is light and singularly strange. Terry spoke to Gary Larson in 1998. He talked with her about the inspiration for his cartoons.
I always had an affinity for animals that lived in swamps and especially snakes. And I always liked snakes and caught them and brought them home. And I had very tolerant parents, I think, that allowed you to bring things into the house like that and set up little cages and terrariums or whatever. And that has always stayed with me. I've even, on into my 20s, I had a real strong interest in reptiles and amphibians. And well, when you do that, you start to get, start to obviously encounter a lot of reactions from people who walk into your place and are horror-stricken about what they see. It always made you feel like you had to explain yourself. And I just never had any fear of those things at all. And I thought they were beautiful. And it started me thinking about, is it me or is it you? Why is someone else looking at this and saying it's ugly or whatever? And I started to realize that maybe we all bring prejudice to nature as well, when we decide what's beautiful and what's ugly, or what's dramatic and impressive and what's not, and because everything is just looks the way it looks because it's
one of your comics is of a snake that's coiled up, but it's sitting on a couch in a living room, and of course the snake has the same patterns. The snake's skin is the same pattern as the couch's upholstery.
Right.
So the couch is kind of, the snake is kind of like camouflaged in the living room.
Right.
The way snakes usually are camouflaged in the woods. Did you have snakes in the house that got out and hid out in the living room?
Oh, I did. I used to, yeah. They would get loose every once in a while. And my folks were never real pleased about that, but still, they never put their foot down. But yeah, well, I usually could find them eventually.
Usually, all right.
Yeah,
sounds awful.
Yeah, I know my. I lost an 8-foot boa constrictor once in our house, and my dad and I went on a search for it, and we were looking everywhere and could not find this thing. And my mom was gone. She wasn't even aware, but I knew I had to find it before she got home. And I remember I was in the living room looking behind the couch or whatever, and I heard my dad scream from another room. And he said, well, actually what he said is he yelled, "I found it," and then the scream came out of him.
What happened?
Well, nothing. Actually, the snake didn't do anything. He had reached up. My mom had like a sewing machine or something. And he had reached up inside. Actually, the cabinet that it was in. And he didn't look. He just put his hand up inside this thing and was feeling. And he put his hand right on it. And it was really funny because he had this reaction was to first of all say that he found it, and then it sort of hit him that he'd found it. and this scream.
In a lot of your comics, you try to see the world through the eyes of insects and animals, and the human world looks, you know, often very absurd when seen through the eyes of insects and animals. In one of your very funny comics, there's a movie theater filled with insects, and they're watching a horror movie called Return of the Killer Windshield.
Right.
I think it's very funny. What kind of things do you wonder about when you wonder about what an insect's point of view is like? Do you spend a lot of time doing that, thinking, I wonder how the world looks to the insects that we kill when we drive quickly on the highway?
Well, I suppose I do. But, you know, it's always been confusing to me as well as to try to understand how or where this idea came from, how I got there.
With the idea of that particular cartoon or just it, ideas in general?
In general, because now, I mean, I'm thinking about the cartoon you mentioned and I'm going, well, how did I think of that? And why did that come to me? I imagine I am starting to think about their world and looking at it and what would be like and what are the threats and dangers and encounters that they have in their world and what do I know about them and their lives and life cycles and start thinking like that.
We've been talking about real creatures. I want to talk about monsters a little bit. You have some great monster comics that you've done over the years. And one of them, a monster couple is sitting at the kitchen table. They're drinking coffee. And Mr. Monster says, "Dang, look at the time. And I got to be in little Billy Harrison's closet before nightfall." did you think that there were lots of monsters in your house when you were a boy hiding out?
I did. I was, I'll tell you this. I had a real fear of my closet when I was a kid. And I was convinced that something lived in my closet. And I had this little ritual as a result that every night when I went to bed, I made sure that the closet doors, I had two sliding doors, I made sure they were completely shut before I went to bed. And one night I was in bed and I had my reading lamp on. And I think I was like reading a comic book or something. And I looked up to check on the closet because I was always checking on the closet. And the door was open like, half an inch or so. And I just was mortified. I couldn't believe that I had done this. I had overlooked it. And of course, I also knew that I couldn't get up and go shut the door because that's just what the thing inside wanted me to do. And I didn't want to walk across the room to turn the light on. And so I just laid there and I was really in a cold sweat wondering what to do about this. And I went back to reading for a while. And I looked up again, like half a minute later. And I wasn't sure, but I thought that maybe the door was now a little wider, that it opened a little. But if it had, it was very subtle. And I looked down again and looked up once more. And this time I was convinced it was like now like an inch open, wide open. And now all I could do was just stare at it. And I was just staring at this closet. And I found myself trying to look into this black slit in the into the closet, and eventually I could make out an eye staring back at me, just one eye looking at me, and this primal scream came out of me, and at the same time that I was screaming, the door just slid open very slowly, just before my eyes, and my brother stepped out. He I don't know how long he'd been hidden in there, but he knew I had this fear, and he was just milking it out.
Oh, he had your number.
Oh boy, did he? Yeah.
So did that reinforce or end your fear of the closet?
Oh, it didn't end anything for me.
what did you expect the monsters would look like, since you've drawn a lot of monsters over the years?
I think the monsters that I saw in my mind were very werewolf-like, I think.
Lots of hair, big fangs.
Yeah.
Partly human, partly animal.
Actually, and I realize again, my older brother had a big influence on me because when we shared a bedroom, he had a dream one night in which, and he woke up screaming, and my mom came running in to see what was wrong, and he described this dream to her of being in a basement somewhere and this wolf that walked on its hind legs was trying to get him, and the wolf kind of shuffled its feet, and he could hear him coming, and he described the sound of these feet going shh, shh, shh down the hallway toward him, and when it finally showed up, it was this huge wolf on its hind legs, and it didn't have any pupils, it just had pure white eyes, And it became sort of famous in our household as known as the wolf with the pure white eyes. And he completely forgot about it after he woke up. But for me, his dream haunted me for the longest time. And I think I kind of absorbed his dream, that story, and worried about that wolf somewhere in our house for years.
As an adult, you came up for one of your cartoons with a good device to protect against monsters. It's the monster snorkel. And
yeah.
It allows a child to stay under the covers, hidden from the monsters, while still breathing through this snorkel. And, you know, in reading that, it made me think that, you know, in my Fear of Monster era, I had to vigilantly stay with my head outside of the covers, because as long as I was watching, they probably wouldn't come. See, so if I was under the covers, that's when I'd be vulnerable.
Oh, no, that was very different from my own private version of how to survive. I could have suffocated maybe some nights. I just did not want to expose any part of me, I thought.
It was interesting that you were on the one hand so attracted to, you know, like snakes and kind of creepy, crawly type things that would scare a lot of people. And on the other hand, you were really afraid of monsters.
Mm-hmm. Well, literally, it was. I guess that's the difference between day and night for me.
Oh, sure, yeah,
because
right.
Yeah, but in the daylight, I was into nature, and I read books on biology and natural history, and I studied about snakes and other animals. I mean, I was really into that. But boy, when the sun went down, it's like, oh, this is another world.
Terry Gross speaking with Gary Larson. His cartoons have been collected in a new book, The Complete Far Side, 1980 to 1994. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Gary Larson. There's a brand new collection of his Far Side cartoons.
You've said that you don't think of yourself as a very good artist in terms of drawing, there's a limit to your capacities in drawing. How did you start drawing, and how did you feel about it when you started?
Started drawing The Far Side?
No, just drawing in general.
In general? Well, I was real little. I was drawing since I can remember. And I was serious about it then. I wasn't drawing like cartoons. I mean, they probably looked like cartoons, but I was drawing whales and dinosaurs and things like that. And I was always interested in it. And that was another thing my folks encouraged. I mean, they always kept me supplied in paper and whatever. So I've never considered myself to be a great... I think I can communicate something. I draw well enough to get something across. And I think sometimes there's a risk in... I see, I think, with some people, and they draw so well, they almost kill the life of something, you know, of the humor. I think there's nuances that you have to concentrate on, and if you get those down, the rest of it's not as essential.
Well, with your comics, the way they're drawn, they're kind of drawn as if they're your thought balloon or something. They're very, it's like what's going on in your mind as opposed to what's going on in the real world. So the fact that everything's a little eccentric in how it's drawn, it seems to be the way it should be, because it's about your sensibility as opposed to the actuality of the fact of the world.
Yeah, right. The things that I draw that generally come from inside me. I know of cartoonists who ideas are triggered by something. And this has happened to me too. Someone will say something, or you'll be somewhere, or, you know, and it'll just hit you like that. But for me, I relied mostly on just sitting down at the drafting table and starting to let myself go. And I would call up things from inside me, that either experiences or something I knew from my education or my background or something. And my sense of humor is the same sense of humor that my entire family has. It's the kind of things that happen around the dinner table. And so, yeah, it's definitely from within, I guess.
Did you ever think that you would be doing this professionally, or did it just seem like a hobby?
Oh, I had no idea in the world that I would do this professionally. This is such a weird thing to have happened. I look back on it. I just, you know, it's just one of those things. I rolled the dice and tried it and paid off. And boy, did it. In fact, when I first started, I just wanted to pay the rent. That was my fantasy. Gee, could you actually do something you like to do and make a living at it? And as soon as it reached that level, I was totally satisfied that this is great.
Now, if memory serves and if what I read was accurate, you started off drawing doing cartoons for a Seattle paper,
mm-hmm.
and then took them to the San Francisco Chronicle,
mm-hmm.
where an editor, much to your surprise,
yeah.
actually liked them a lot,
mm-hmm.
and asked you to stay on with them and
right.
and draw for them. And I think it was the people at the Chronicle who named it The Far Side.
Yes, yeah.
What did you think of the title?
I thought it was fine. They said, we'd like to call it The Far Side. What do you think of that? And I said, well, sounds good to me. And I guess it sounded good to me because it didn't lock it in a whole lot. I was worried you're going to give it a name of some character, whatever, Ernie or something, you know, and I didn't want to have that. I wanted to have some freedom in it. And they also wanted me to develop maybe characters like Charlie Brown or something that would always come back, because they said that's what's been proven about newspaper comics, is that readers need that familiarity of seeing the same character come back over and over again. And that's where I said I just didn't know if I could do that. Well, one of the reasons I didn't think I could do it, because I didn't even know if I could draw 6 cartoons a week. I didn't know where my ideas were going to come from, or if I could do this year after year, or week after week. And I signed this contract that said I would do it, thinking I probably won't go to prison if I can't. And it's my, you know, why not? I'll give it a shot.
Was it hard when you actually signed on to do, 6 a week?
Yeah.
Was it hard to do them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, I was terrified, too. I just didn't know if I could do that. I almost lied by saying I could. And actually, they wanted me, and I did. I sent 8 a week when I started, because they wanted to have the luxury, of course, of, you know, editing out a couple. But before that, I was just doing a weekly cartoon. And I was having a hard time coming up with that. And I put a lot of thought. But the thing that happens that I discovered as time went by is it actually gets easier. I think it's almost like you teach yourself how to think, and it's like you start getting chops or something by doing it, forced to be doing it day after day.
Was there a first comic that you can think of that got this really big reaction and made you realize, oh, people are paying attention and they're responding?
Yeah, that happened to me with a very strange cartoon, I have to concede. I drew this cartoon showing a cow, a cow standing in front of a workbench, looking out at the reader. And on the workbench were these just amorphous shapes. And there's like a barn in the background or whatever, this little scene. And I titled it Cow Tools. And I had been thinking, I remember how I got to this idea. I was thinking about how anthropologists used to define mankind as being, or man as being the only animal that made and used tools, and then they subsequently discovered that, well, even some birds and primates do that, so they had to change the definition a little. But I started thinking about, well, what if cows started made tools? What would they make? And my intention was that, well, you don't know what they are; only the cow knows what they are. And you know, here are this display of tools that a cow would use, and only a cow knows. But the reaction was unbelievable. I thought it was the end of my career, honestly, because I just started getting a barrage of phone calls and letters and
saying what?
Well, it's saying, what does it mean? And that's what happened, is that everyone was just utterly confused by it. And I think there was one newspaper that posted a some kind of a reward or something for anyone that could figure it out. And I actually, that was the first time that I realized that, you know, more than six people were looking at it. Or I had no idea.
Terry Gross, speaking with Gary Larson in 1998. His new collection of cartoons is called The Complete Far Side, 1980 to 1994. I'm David Biancooley, and this is Fresh Air.